Hi, I'm Terry, Instagram's sassy sober mum. Welcome to my podcast, Sober Stories from Everyday People. Bringing you stories from people just like you and I, the aim of this podcast is to share our experiences with drinking and how we got and stayed successfully sober. You can now access most of my coaching and guidance through my Thrive Sober online video course. This is an easy to follow course containing 50 videos with backed up writing and recommendations that can be worked through in your own time. There is a brilliant app that you can download to access the course on your phone or your tablet. You can skip through the course choosing content you most need in that moment, or you can work through them from 1 to 50 in order. You can come back to the learning or redo sections to help with parts of emotional sobriety that you are struggling with. The course covers holidays, summertime, Christmas, socializing, what to read, identifying and coping with triggers, complacency, the 100-day moderation trap, breaking down old beliefs, managing your thoughts, sugar cravings, and plenty more. You will also get a free copy of my Thrive Sober ebook in the introduction section. Visit www.thrivesobercoaching.com/course to learn more or get access. Use coupon code HALFPRICE to get 50% off. I've had so many messages from people that say the ebook and the course together has been the thing to get them over the line and achieving their first 100 days successfully sober. Hello, and welcome to Sober Stories from Everyday People. Today, I'm talking to Vinay, and he is in Hale in Cheshire, and he's been sober for 319 days. Thank you so much for making the time for me this evening, Vinay.
Thank you for having me, Terry. It's lovely being here.
I'm excited to get into your story. We've had a little bit of a chat, haven't we, beforehand, and yeah, I'm just, as I said to you, and I probably always say when I have a male voice on the show, I'm delighted to have another male on the show talking about this subject, because I think it's really important that we have men and women sharing their stories and hopefully healing both men and women out there with those stories. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you so that we can get to know who you are before we jump into your story with alcohol?
Absolutely. So my name is Vinay, and I'm a 43-year-old, a very hands-on dad of two, a 10-year-old boy, Romeo, and a 3-year-old girl, Kavya, who keep me really busy. I'm happily married, and we are together for almost 15 years. I work as a physiotherapist, and I'm passionate about long-distance running, which I've only started around 7 years ago. It's just to keep up with my son, Romer, because when he was getting older, and then I've realized that, you know, I have to start kicking ball with him. There you go. So we started some running journey. So I spent my first 26 years of initial 26 years in India. So I was born in India, and I have immigrated in UK following that for my higher studies. Maintaining an optimal balance of physical and mental health is paramount in our family.
Yeah.
We all regularly exercise together and eat really healthy. I spend a lot of time with my son, Romer. We run or bike ride together regularly. I'm closest to him. He's the main catalyst for my sobriety, to be very honest. And I'll get back to that in the story. Just a disclaimer, English is not my first language. I have only learned how to speak English when I came to UK. English is my second language. So I won't be able to speak all the big and fancy words in this podcast. It would be pretty simple and basic. So please excuse me for that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. We talked about that before you came online, and I said to you that, well, I can't speak another language, and I certainly can't do a podcast in another language. So
I have a lot of admiration for you coming on and sharing your story. So in terms of long distance running, what distances are we talking about?
So I have, so far I have ran 50 miles, ultra marathons.
Wow.
But I am passionate about marathons.
Yeah.
So I like to do international marathons mainly. So that's my way of exploring a city on foot.
Yeah.
I've done a few marathons and ultra marathons. But as I said, I've started running around 7 years ago. It's just by the time my son was 3 years old, until then, I wasn't doing anything at all. And when he started doing things, he wanted me to join in running and playing football, and I've realized that I'm not fit at all to even do to climb upstairs.
Yeah.
And obviously drinking was a massive part of that as well at that time, which you know, you would never accept it that that's the main cause of you being so unfit, and there's no reason to be unfit for your little ones. But then I started realizing that it's time for me to have a kick on my backside. And I started a bit of a jog with a few friends, and I started loving it. I've realized that I'm so passionate about it. Before that, I have had no hobbies, but since I've started running, there's never looking back. I personally feel that that's the best thing I've done. I was suffering with a severe childhood asthma when I came in UK, and it was really bad. And UK is known for exacerbating your asthma because it's an island and it's quite humid, so the asthma generally get worse when you're in UK. But I must say that I have, thankfully, touch wood, cured my asthma with the running.
God.
So there's no looking backwards. I'm due to run a 3-country marathon in October. So that marathon starts in Germany, and you run through the Alps in Switzerland, and then you finish it in Austria. So that's in October. April, I've got Manchester to Liverpool ultra marathon booked as well. So I always have races pre-booked that keeps me on the toes. That so I ideally do 2 marathons or ultra marathons a year. One is in spring and the other is in autumn. So my whole year is kind of,
yeah,
that keeps me busy with my plan and fitness and everything else as well.
Oh, that's amazing. It's that, I mean, a marathon is a big run, right? But yeah, ultra marathons and 50 miles, I mean, that is super impressive, and just shows you as well that when you can go from not doing anything to doing what you're doing, if you, yeah, just try it and get into it and find something that you're passionate about. I think that's
absolutely
super. And I bet that's really helped as well with your sober journey. So linking to that then, let's go back to the beginning. Where did your life with alcohol start, and paint the picture? What did that look like?
Wow, okay. So that might be a little bit different as compared to your other speakers, because obviously I was born in India, and things are very different in India. There's a massive taboo in the society about drinking, where the elders wouldn't drink in front of the youngers, or the youngers wouldn't drink in front of the elders, vice versa. At a very early age, I have noticed that my dad would also be drinking, and he was never a massive drinker. And that through pure observation, we have noticed that he would drink one small pack of whiskey or something like that each night. So his routine would be that he would lock himself up in the night. At the end of the day, once everything is done and dusted, he will lock himself up in the night. He will have that drink, have his meal and whatever, and then he would only come out of the room in the morning. And we were not allowed to go in the room once he's in. So out of curiosity, you know, right from the very, very beginning, we've been told once dad is done for the day and in his room, you're not supposed to go inside. Even though the room is unlocked or open, we would not go. And that kind of, you know, it created a big sense of curiosity that what the hell is happening inside. So by the age of 8 or 9, mom has asked me to get something from a cupboard, and suddenly my finger touched to a bottle of whiskey. You know, you're curious and you get the bottle out, you're on your own. And I had a sip of a whiskey. And I had a sense of excitement that the whole body's having tingling and pins and needles, and like, oh my goodness, what is happening to me? You know, that was amazing. Since then, I had the handful encounters of the similar experience. Obviously, I haven't told this to anyone because, again, there is a massive taboo between peers and the friends. You don't want to be telling things like this. And the environment is very different back home at that time. It's still very similar, but it was pretty rigid. But then following that, I've been sent to boarding school where I was introduced. By the time I was like 14 or so, and then you just really get introduced with an alcohol by friends. And it was quite controlled. Because of a social taboo, you wouldn't be drinking in open, it'd be very secluded, and it would be a really quick one, get it done and over with it. So you wouldn't have a time to sit around, lounge around, drink around, get drunk, and so on and so forth. So since then, I went to university, things were still in moderation. It'll be like a binge over the weekend, again quite out in a closed bubble. But then, once I'm done with my studies, once I was there, by the time I came to UK for my master's and high studies, I had a massive cultural shock. I saw that, oh my goodness, you can simply buy alcohol anywhere. Without being hesitant, without being people judged, that what's happening here, you know, you can buy any time of the day and you can drink any time of the day and you can drink as much as you want. And you know, you're like a kid in a candy shop, that, oh my goodness. And you're a student and drinking is ample around here. It's a recipe of disaster. And that's what happened. So I'll be drinking during the week. I'll be drinking while I was studying. Fortunately, it's never affected my grades or, you know, that's how you're like a working alcoholic kind of person. But then I met my wife by the time at the tail end of my master's, and then we got married. And once you get married, my wife is a drinker, so things have calmed down a bit because I started working in NHS, and you wouldn't be wanting to be drinking. You want to have some sort of seriousness in your life and want to control things. And that's how I started drinking over the weekends. And then you would be want to drink over the weekend, and then you want to recoup everything what you missed during the week. So it started becoming quite a binge one. And we'd have odd blackouts, which I don't think I've ever realized it, that I had blackouts until I had my final blackout. And then when I started reflecting that, how did I have a blackout? And then when I started reflecting and journaling, then I noticed that I was having quite a lot of blackouts when I was drinking. And with the drinking, I've said a lot of bad things to people. I've said a lot of bad things to my partner and spoiled a lot of relationship. You know, that's what you do when you're drinking. You don't really know what you're doing. Don't get me wrong, it's not all bad, but it's a lot of good fun as well. But it's only fun until it's fun, you know. I must say that my wife has always been the most supportive during all these times. She's never judged me. I've said a lot of wrong things and a lot of friends and families during my drinking, and I'm not proud of it. That's it, basically. You know, you don't know when you're drinking what you're doing and who you're hurting, and you're always in a dilemma that you're doing the right thing, I guess you're not, isn't it? Until you stop drinking and reflect back and think that, you know, what have you done and how many people you've hurt and dangerous things you have done, which you shouldn't have. I've missed a lot of flights because of that, because when you go to the airport and you just want to get drunk and wasted a lot of good holidays where the whole aim is just to drink and not even to get out of the hotel and not explore and... not nice. So it wasn't great. I'm not proud of it for what I've done, to be very honest.
Yeah. Yeah. It catches up with you, doesn't it? I think.
Yes.
The fun of the teenage years and even to, you know, uni or that period of your life. I think that the fun element is bigger and keeps you stepping on the merry-go-round kind of thing. But I think at some point when that is depends on who you are, I think, and how you started drinking and how long you've been drinking. But I was like you, I think for me in my 20s, definitely, and in a lot of my 30s as well, I just did a lot of regrettable things. and it's sort of having to reconcile that stuff, you know, I think I've done a good job of that now. Actually, I've let a lot of it go, but it's certainly it. When you have a hard look at it, it's like, oh my God, what was I doing?
Yeah. Absolutely, you're not proud of it, and such a reckless things have done. I wouldn't be my best friend if I would have met, you know, myself prior to the sobriety. It wasn't nice. It's crazy. Good times, but more of a bad times, and good times until you start drinking.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I was the one who would be wanting to just drink and drink and drink and I've got so many relationships where we are only associated with the drinking. We know each other for the last 15 years, but there has been never a single meeting when we haven't got drunk. And sometimes I look back and reflect back, and it's like, I don't think we have built any, it hasn't added any value, to be very honest. Because I would be the one who would be starting to drink, and I'll be the one who would be just drinking and drinking and drinking until, you know, until things happens and you start saying things and regrettable things and say things or you know, that's not great.
Yeah. And so for you, when did it become something that you thought, right, I want to do something about this, or I want to change? Like, for example, did you have an awareness throughout all of these drinking times where you had these kind of more regrettable moments, or like you said, on reflection, maybe blacking out and things like that? Was it in the back of your mind? Was there ever a kind of like, oh, I should stop drinking? Or yeah, how did all of that unfold for you and lead you to the point where you actually stopped?
Yeah, I mean, when is it not? I think it's common with almost every drinker, isn't it? You have a shameful morning that what you've done, and you should be doing it again, and I'm not going to be drinking tomorrow. And then that day come, and then, you know. So I wouldn't say I was sober curious. I had I had a, I always had that sense that I've not done the right thing. But that's the power of alcohol, isn't it? You soon forget what you have done the moment you you get out of that hangover, and the moment you kind of a little fresh, and then you start looking at the alcohol again, and then there you go. Doesn't matter who you've hurt last time. It doesn't matter. Even if you've hurt the most important person of your life, the alcohol makes you forget so quickly that, you know, what have you done? Yeah. Because I think there's no other substance in the world that can do that or has a power as compared to alcohol. That's what it does. And I had loads and loads of regrettable moments where I have said few bits and it's like my best friend's wife doesn't speak to me for the last 15 years, and she still doesn't talk to me. They come to our house, but then she still doesn't speak to me because I've said something really nasty 15 years ago when I was drunk. And she's still upset. And I've apologized a million times, but she's one of those who wouldn't want to you know, forgive me. I accept it. I accept it that, you know, I shouldn't have said a few bits. And I did it. But you do things, you know. But when my son was born in 2014, everything was going actually fine, and I continued doing my binge drinking until he was three. And as I said, that when he started going out, and when he wanted to do football and park and stuff like that, and then I would do, and every time I would run, you know, behind him, I would get tired and breathless and everything else. So I had that sense of feeling that, you know, that I don't think the alcohol is helping me.
Yeah.
But then I got into running, and then I become quite good in running, and then I started becoming fitter. And because I was started getting fitter, every time when I will do long runs, I will treat myself with a big alcohol binge. So you know how the alcohol made me compensate that I'm not fit, so I should be getting fitter for my son by stopping drinking. So instead, I started running, got fitter. So my alcohol started tricking me that I'm fit now, yeah, and I can drink. So I don't need to stop alcohol. Alcohol is not causing any problem. It was me being unfit, and now I've got fit. I can run any distance, so I'm fit. I deserve an alcohol. So every time I would go for a long runs, I will treat myself with a big binge, and then I would feel the aftermath of it, because alcohol stays in your system for at least a week. And so if I'm running on a Saturday, a long run, my next run will be on Monday or Tuesday. And I am feeling it. I'm feeling it that I'm not performing as much as I should, or as much as I'm putting my time in. And I was end up having injuries and so on and so forth. It was impacting my fitness, as well as my relationship with him as well, and other friends and family. And that kind of made me a bit of a sober curious at that point. But quitting alcohol, it felt like a mission impossible task, to be very honest.
So if you're 319 days now, so that's actually, yeah, just nearly a year ago, isn't it? So just on your timeline, you're just doing all of this running and stuff. This is kind of like 2014, 2015.
No, so 2024, yeah. So it was 2017. So when my son is born in 14, he was 3 year old in 17. Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that time I started running, and it took me from 17 to 2024 to started actually coming to a terms that it's the thing which is holding me back, holding my relationship back, holding my my fitness back, giving me all the injuries, making me nasty, making me obnoxious, making me anxious, spoiling my sleep, spoiling almost everything what I have. Because I when I came to UK, I came empty-handed with a massive student loan. And I started my career by working in McDonald's. And they wouldn't keep me on the till because I can't speak English and can't take an order. So they would keep me back in to do the dishes. So I would be studying during the day, and they needed somebody to do the dishes at the end in the night. So I would be working from 5 o'clock till 3 o'clock in McDonald's in the backyard to do clean the floors. And so from that level, I kind of came and I wasn't moving much forward, to be very honest, after a point. And something was holding me back. And it was hard for me to understand that what was holding me, what was holding me back, and why. And it's not that I don't know what was holding me back, but I don't want to accept it that that's holding me back because I love it too much.
Yeah.
I bloody love it. I don't want to give it up at any cost. I want to hold it back close to my chest, close to my heart. Doesn't matter whatever happens.
Yeah. That's the weird relationship, though, I think, that alcohol has in our lives, is in some ways it's almost like alcohol was your friend, you know, and it came with you, it's from your childhood, it came with you, it helped you through all those, you know, college or university years, and it's like, and then before you know it, it's so present in your life that it just feels like you just can't separate from it. And I think a lot of people feel like that, because I could ask most of my friends, for example, you know, how would you feel if you could never have alcohol again? They would say, well, I wouldn't need to do that anyway. You know, I wouldn't need to, you know, and they would be protective of it. A lot of people would, of course, because that's the sort of relationship that we end up building with alcohol. But not saying those friends are as reliant, perhaps, as maybe you were, or maybe even I was, but that alcohol is on a pedestal for whatever reason. It is on a pedestal in people's lives, and people don't think that you can have fun, or that you can have connection, or that you can be successful or be whatever without it. You know, it's so powerful, really. But it's such an illusion, because actually I always think that alcohol just does an amazing job of stealing the credit for everything, when actually it's the worst thing in the picture. It's not adding any value to anything. But yet when we go out on that night out and we're with our friends and we're having a wonderful time, just because everybody's drinking from a bottle of wine, it means that alcohol gets to steal the credit for that. And that's the thing that's making it fun. No, it's not the thing that's making it fun. The environment and you and the friends and is really the thing that's making that fun. But unfortunately, we put so much emphasis on the fact that the alcohol in those pictures are the things that's kind of the driving force that's making it all amazing. And that's a real challenge for people, I think, that the thought of giving up is really horrific to begin with. I think everyone goes through that.
But it's so embedded in the society that, you know, whatever is the occasion, it's incomplete without alcohol. Yeah. Mm. You know, you name the occasion and you need to have an alcohol.
Yeah.
If you haven't got drunk after marathon in a post-marathon party, then we haven't done a marathon right.
Yeah.
You know, you got to get drunk. And I don't understand now, because I've ran two marathons since I became sober, and I felt fantastic. The recovery is amazing. You feel good. You end up having no injuries, you know, as less as possible. Plus, you're proud of yourself as well. You don't really need to be drinking. You really need to have a lovely food, have a good bath, and your family around you. That's what you really need as a post-marathon party. You don't want to be getting drunk for what?
Yeah. But it's so funny, like when you were talking about the reward after exercise, I did a few triathlons and a few runs and things, not the same distances as you, but you know, some 10k runs and you know, some triathlons and things just before I stopped drinking. And I remember that all of that exercise was rewarded by having lots of wine. And yeah, I posted on Instagram about that a few times, and so many people resonate with that. Like, isn't it crazy? You think that if you run for an hour, somehow that just undoes the fact that you had a bottle of wine the night before. And it doesn't. It doesn't undo it. And like you said, it makes it a lot harder, and you're more prone to injuries and just general bad feeling, bad mental health. But for some reason, the bigger the exercise, the bigger the run, the bigger the reward, the more alcohol you need. And it's kind of just so, when you step out of that, like you have done, like I have done, and you look back at that, you almost feel like that is the most crazy narrative ever, to be so health conscious, to be so into sport, or to be so into running, and to be training and being almost like you're like athlete level, you know, with those kinds of distances. And yet then you're just pouring in all this carcinogenic poison. It's bizarre, isn't it? That, yeah, it's just bizarre. But you don't see it when you're in it.
No, I agree. And tell you, I see that way, that anybody who can perform some sort of high level exercise or any exercise at any level, to be very honest, it is a blessing from the God. And you should not be taking it lightly and for granted, because to be very honest, it takes a fraction of a second to get that away from you. And what we do is by running a long distance or by doing a big exercise and putting an alcohol in, is we are going against the nature, because how many people, you know, we see can't even walk. And with the blessing of God, and you worked hard, I worked hard to reach to a stage where we are, and we are still not respecting what we can do. Running 5K, forget, people sometimes struggle walking 5K, and we're just taking it for granted, and disrespecting the nature. Because where I see myself in last 7 years, I can't imagine, none of my family member or my wife or anyone, I personally can't imagine. Human beings are capable of everything or anything, you know. And I personally, I play a lot of gratitude that what I've been given is by the blessing of God, by lovely family who's look after me, who don't judge me, and who's been, my wife has been there. If she wouldn't have been here, I don't think I would have been where I am today. She's my biggest advocate and the silent cheerleader, to be very honest, who doesn't say much, but I know that she's there. Dragged me from parties, drove me and saved me from a lot of nasty situations. And I wouldn't be sitting here talking all this if she wouldn't have been around me like a rock, being very honest.
Oh, and so when you made that, you know, that day that you woke up and you stopped drinking, was that an intentional day? Did you know you were stopping drinking, or was it a spontaneous thing? Like, what made you wake up and stop drinking 319 days ago?
Wow, it was quite spontaneous, Terry. I had no intention of stopping drinking. I was thick as a head, you know. I wouldn't stop drinking for anyone. I always said, my friends, I love drinking. Drinking is better than smoking. You guys smoke, I drink. Drink is much, much better than smoking. I was so delusional. And one fine afternoon, you know, Sunday afternoon, a friend has invited us to share some news. And we all went, and We all went, my family, little one, myself, my wife, we all went there, and they broke news that they are pregnant. And, you know, a drinker need a news to drink or a reason to drink, whether it's a sad news or a happy news or any news, you need a reason to drink. And what a better news than your friend is pregnant, you know? And she was like, fair enough. So we were sitting in a garden in their backyard, beautiful, beautiful day. And my friend has opened a bottle of tequila. And so shots after shots after shots. And I remember one last shot when my wife said, I think you have had too many shots. And you know how the drinkers, they get a bit aggressive and offensive and or defensive, I must say, that, oh, no, I'm not drinking. Don't tell me what to do, okay? I know what I'm doing. And that was the last thing I remember. And that was literally within 2 hours of me being there. And after that, we were there for another 5 hours. So we were there for total 7 hours. I remember just initial 2 hours.
Oh, how frightening.
I was fine. My family dragged me home in a taxi. I found myself in the middle of the night, waking up next to my wife in a bed with pounding headache, very thirsty. And I'm like, oh, where am I and how am I here? Because last time I remember, I was having shots of tequilas. And obviously, I didn't really wake anyone up. Everyone was sleeping. I texted my friend. He didn't respond. It was the middle of the night. Next morning, I couldn't really sleep because I had, as if my heart would come out, you know, it was pounding with an anxiety and palpitation and headache, and I wasn't feeling best at all. And so in the morning, I called him and I asked him, what the hell happened last night? And he said, nothing. It was a fantastic night. I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, yeah. I said, I don't remember anything after 2 hours. And he said, no, you were absolutely fine. You were fine. We chatted until you sat in a taxi. You had a dinner. We were talking. But then he said that, let me send you a clip. If they have a Ring camera inside the kitchen. We were talking inside the kitchen. He said, let me send you the clip before you were leaving. And he sent me a clip. And I was just standing next to the kitchen cabinet somewhere and talking to everyone, and I was looking so drunk. And he said, you were not out of line at all. You were absolutely fine, funny, good, and everything was okay. And I saw myself and I was looking like, oh my God, I can't believe how ugly I was looking. I was half hanging down and I wasn't looking at all. I would not want to look myself or anyone to look at that clip. And that was a sheer embarrassment. When I woke up in the morning, the little one obviously came to me and he was frightened. He was frightened. The wife was a bit upset as well. He was frightened and he spoke to me and he said, Daddy, you were not talking to anyone properly. You didn't even speak to anyone in the taxi. You were acting really cuckoo. And that's what he says all the time whenever he sees me, like, you know, had a few drinks and you were acting cuckoo. That's his word, that, you know, I was drunk. He was crying, basically. And he was sad. He was crying. He was anxious. And it was not the nice scene. And it was massively embarrassing for me because, and worrying because I should be looking after my family. It's not other way around. Obviously, we all have responsibility to look after each other. But you know, when I had young kids with me and that was the middle of the night, my family dragged me home and I wasn't responsible at all. That made me realize that. That even made me realize that I seriously need to do something about it, about my drinking. But again, you know, that feeling lasted for a couple of days, as they do until you have had that last stint of hangover, and that's it. Things being forgotten, promise being made within the family that daddy's not going to drink so much again, daddy's going to behave well. But that blackout made me, it scared me to the core of my bones, because in the past when I had blackouts, I was probably in my own house or anywhere where I've never realized it that I have had a blackout until this one where we had to all come home in the taxi. And people do. I have read about blackouts. People do lots and lots of bad things. And if my family would have been there, if my wife would have been there, I don't know what would I have done. People do lots and lots of bad things when they get into blackouts. But then, as I said, you know, a couple of days gone, things being forgotten, me being me, next weekend on, a couple of friends home for a meal and I poured drinks for everyone. And I was pouring a glass of wine for myself. And the kids were sitting on one corner watching telly, and all the grown-ups from the other side of the hall just sitting on a dining table drinking, talking. And I poured myself a drink and I looked at him, and instead of watching telly, he was glancing at me, and oh boy, his eyes were sad. He was staring at me, his eyes were sad. But you know what? Alcohol is the strongest power, which can ignore even the saddest eyes. And I poured that glass of wine in my glass, and I don't know what happened. The glass got off my hand, and I broke it. I broke it. My friend commented me that you already drunk. Have you been drinking all day? You have a reputation, isn't it, within friends? And said, you've been drinking all day. I was like, no. So why did you break a glass? I said, no, I don't know. It's just slipped off my hand. So I said, okay. So I started pouring another glass. And I poured another glass. Believe it or not, that glass fell off my hand again.
Wow.
My wife wasn't very happy. That you, bloody hell, you broke two glasses in like 2 minutes. What the hell are you doing, man? And like, oh my goodness. And he was looking at it. He was looking at it. And I just don't know what was going in his head. I thought, is he worth it? Is he worth pouring the third glass? Or not really, you know? There was a force that was forcing me to do something different at that point.
I would be thinking, like, that's a sign, you know, two broken glasses full
of
wine.
Yeah, spooky. I don't know. There's a higher power.
That is spooky.
And what I have done instead is like, you know what? Just fuck it. I might instead have a Diet Coke. I can't be bothered. and I had a Diet Coke. I poured a glass, had a Diet Coke, and guess what? I was fine all night. Everybody was drinking and I did not feel a thing. I didn't feel that I was missing out. I felt actually okay. I felt okay. And the best thing that happened was he started becoming a bit normal, my little one, and he started concentrating on something else instead of watching his dad, because you don't really want your 10-year-old to keep an eye on you. You're a grown man. But then, you know, that's what the reputation you've developed. It's my fault. It's not his. And I really needed to get out of that thing, you know, because we are super close. We are best friends. We do almost everything together. And I don't want this relationship to go ahead and develop in a way where he's looking after me instead of me looking after him, you know. That night I have decided maybe from tomorrow I'm not going to be drinking. When I woke up in the morning, my sleep was brilliant. I did not have that big pounding in my chest, which I usually have on every post-drinking morning, you know, and throughout the week as well, because the effect of alcohol lasts for a long time. And I felt a bit different because obviously I wasn't, after that incident where I had a blackout, I didn't really drink until the weekend where the glass been broken. So there was a lot of sense of excitement when I woke up in the morning. First thing I told this to my little one, you know what, buddy, I think I want to give it a go. You know, I don't want to be drinking anymore. It's like, what are you talking about? I said, I want to be sober, man. I've had it enough now. I think I'm going to call it a day. He said, did you tell mommy? I was like, not yet. So I sat with the family and I told her as well. And he's like, okay, maybe you could do like 100 days or 30 days start with. 100 days not possible with you. Maybe 30 days to start with and see how you feel. I said, okay. But I had a very strong sense of desire that I think I'm going to be calling it off. You know, I've had it enough. I'm not going to be having it again. And that's the day. That's it, basically. I've not had it since then.
That's amazing. What an amazing story. It's, yeah, incredible. The blackout thing, I think a lot of the times when I was kind of in a blackout, I didn't have any evidence. And of course, I couldn't remember. So you quickly forget, right? And I've done that many times. I think when you see photographs or some footage of you or people talking about everything that you've been saying and doing and you have zero memory, I can't think of anything more frightening than that. I really, really connect with what you were saying there. I have had the same thing where even on the last night I was drinking, I was kind of in a blackout, don't remember a lot. And I just got photos of people saying, oh, no, you were fine. And, you know, and this and this and this happened. And I'm like, I've got no memory. It is a horrible feeling to think that you are so switched off, but to other people, you're acting so normal to them.
Yeah.
And that is just, I think it's so frightening. It's horrible. And obviously that created a big shift in you, you know, a really good shift, but you know, that undid a bit of the glamour almost, I think, for you probably, because it was just so horrible, wasn't it? All of that collection of like your child feeling so sad, and you know, it's just so much to process there. But that blackout and not having any recollection, that is a horrible, horrible feeling, not being able to connect the dots of that. I've been there many times. And so you kind of had this kind of renewed excitement, or this excitement, let's say. And I love that your son has been a bit of a cheerleader for you as well. We were talking about that before you came online, that he has actually listened with you to some of the Sober Stories episodes, which I think is really cute. But what did you, you know, you had this kind of new mindset and you were in this good gear, I think is the best way that I can describe it. You're in the kind of right gear to do this, obviously. What did you do? How did you kind of do it? Apart from that, did you get involved in like the reading and things like that?
So I've always been quite keen as listener for the self-development, you know. I like it. How to make money, how to be a better person, and so on and so forth. And I was aware about it. There are podcasts out there about sobriety as well. However, obviously, I've never listened to it. Why do you want to be going to that route where you don't want to be going, you know? So I've always just chucked them in the bin. Like, well, I don't want to be hitting them. But then I thought it would be a good start. It would be a really good start because I drive quite a lot for work. And I thought that would be a good time to start with. And the first podcast which I got my hands on was the Stop Drinking Coach by Badia Reze. He's an American one, and he speaks fantastic. And very quickly after hearing all these podcasts, I have learned that, buddy, you can't tackle this disease, white knuckling, and with the willpower, because it has a fatigue point like a muscle, and at a very, very, very soon your willpower is going to get tired, and you might end up drinking again. And if you really want to do it long term, then you really need to work on your triggers. And that's how I started working on my triggers, like, you know, one day at a time, playing a tape forward. These are beautiful mantras I have always followed to start with. And I'm into books as well. I love reading. I also stumbled across your podcast, and I found it quite relatable, because there are no fancy celebrities here, and very normal people from a normal walks of life, and a simple language to start with, and very, very, very open and honest conversation with not a lot of filters. And I've got a lot, and I've got a lot of names of the books from your podcast with people like, you know, Alan Carr and all that. So I've read quite a few books, and that has helped me significantly. But the main point was to understand the neuromechanics by working on your triggers. And that has been the deal breaker, and that has helped me in a very short span of time, because what I have done is I have not kept myself away from alcohol. I have still kept alcohol in my house. I have not moved them away, because there are two type of people. One, those who want to move the alcohol away, don't want to be having anything to do with them. And the other person is want to just dive deep into it and take it from there and see how it goes. And I was the one who's not moved alcohol away from where they are in my pantry. And I haven't stopped any socialization at all. And I'm not informed or told my friends about it. That I'm not drinking. So what I've done is I've got some non-alcoholic beers, and I'm the host, so I would always make drinks for my friends. I know what each of my friends drink and like, and I would continue making drinks for them, but then I will have a non-alcoholic drinks with them, and you know, it was fine until it was like 3 or 4 months later. I've started telling my friends when we were going to their places and when they want to be, you know, hosting us. And I was like, I'm not drinking, or get me a non-alcoholic beer because my marathon is coming. So I'm just kind of, you know, just keeping myself off for marathon. And then there's always a marathon after a marathon. So you can always tell them. I was like, I've got a long run tomorrow or something like that. All I have done is just worked on my triggers. Every time I would have a trigger, I will take a minute, I will play tape forward or backwards, both, and take a minute and see what it could lead me to. I remember a point where I went for a Istanbul marathon, and while coming back, my flight was delayed and got cancelled because the flight was overbooked. So I was sent to a hotel for a night, and the next morning my flight was, and I was at a hotel. I was eating a burger in a hotel lobby, and the bottles were looking so beautiful. I ran a marathon a day before, and now I'm not drinking. I'm just eating, sitting in a bar with loads and loads of bottles. And that was a very early time during my sobriety, and I had a massive trigger. And I remember texting you, that I'm having a big trigger as we speak, and I got a response back from you about playing the tape forward, and I did that and went out for a walk, music, and I must say that I haven't had many triggers. My triggers have been really controlled. I have exposed myself to alcohol Big time. When we still go to grocery shopping, we still buy alcohol for friends, those who like to, because, you know, each have their own specific brands, so-called. So we still buy it. And I will continue doing that, because at the end of the day, I'm hosting. I'm no one to tell people not to drink. You know, they're friends and they're more than welcome to come into my house and drink. And I'm more than welcome to make drinks for them. And I enjoy doing it. As long as they enjoy drinking it, you know, it's a win-win situation for everyone.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. It's such a good approach that I think just, yeah, taking the triggers and working through the triggers. And I think you said an important word there that's so key. It's the trigger comes and it's the pause. It's the pause. It's taking a breath and thinking, what do I need in this situation? Or, right, let's play this forward. Or, you know, do you know what I mean? It's just taking that moment and not reacting to it straight away and trying to get yourself into that place where you lean into it a bit and see what you're capable of, because they don't last that long, really, in the grand scheme. And you can switch out of them. And the more you do that, the more over time you show yourself that you can get stronger and better at doing that. And not only that, you can really fill your evidence cup up with actually enjoying not drinking. I mean, you had that from the get-go. You had the Diet Coke instead of the two smashed glasses of wine, and you actually had a good night and you woke up fresh. I mean, it's that sort of stuff. It's like constantly being able to see those glimmers and the good things that are coming as well from not drinking, you know, as opposed to being maybe sometimes always focused on worrying about the triggers. It's like trying to have that balance, isn't it, of the good and bad stuff. And so for you, like, how has not drinking changed your life? How has it got better?
There's so many gains, and the gain from abstaining drinking has been like enormous at each and every aspect of my life. There's so many, and they're equally important as each other. However, I would like to, you know, highlight a few of them. The first is like self-development. So first of all, I've joined this path only and only to be the best version of myself. I had an injection of self-worth, a confidence which was lacking when I was drinking, and I've excelled really well, you know, in almost all aspects of my life, my running, my relationship, my work, my friend circle, and everything, you know. It's amazing. The second I would say would be fitness. You know, I'm at the peak of my fitness age, which is currently 20 years. So I'm a 40-year-old, but when you look at the VO2 max, you know, your cardiovascular age, wow. I'm 20.
That's incredible. You know?
and it's amazing. My VO2 max is 49, which is quite excellent, to be very honest. So professional athletes would have about 53, those who compete in Olympics and stuff like that. You know, I don't think I'll ever be there. But for a 43-year-old man, I'm not doing too bad.
That is incredible. Yeah, wow. Inspirational.
It's amazing. And my recoveries have been fantastic. I'm virtually, you know, injury-free following runs. I've improved my immunity. I can't remember being sick since I've stopped drinking. Not even a single incidence of illness since I've been sober, and that's crazy. Like, you know, people have winter flus and summer flus or hay flu or whatever, you know.
And you work, you know, you're in the NHS, aren't you? So you're, I mean, you're really exposed to illnesses. Absolutely. Probably. So
absolutely, yeah. And considering a childhood asthma, I've been inhaler free since, you know, since a long time now, partly I will give that to running, but you know, I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
But I've also improved my sleep, anxiety, metabolism, and skin, and you know, the external features are getting better as well. Your skin get clearer, and then you know, the bags under your eyes generally goes off, and you start loving yourself more.
Yeah,
you know? When you look well, then that happens. My relationship has improved, you know, by being sober. I've gained immense respect from my family, my son, and it prevented him for the, you know, from future sad and anxious moments because of my drinking, which could be happening. It was also teach me, you know, that there's never a right time to start a self-development journey. I'm thrilled that my three-year-old daughter, especially Kavya, she would never know me as a drinker.
Oh, that's nice.
That's the best feeling. That's such an amazing feeling. Trust me. It's like your little girls as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I've got a three-year-old as well. Yeah, and I had a pregnancy where in sobriety with her, and so everything was completely different from the first two, where I was drinking, not necessarily, you know, drinking in the pregnancy heavily, having the odd wine here or two, but just, you know, knowing that I had to break and that I had to wait 9 months until I could have a drink again, and having that mindset, you know, whereas with Sadie, just wasn't even anything I thought about. Like, alcohol was just not on the radar, and that freedom, you know, it's just that on its own is so wonderful. But yeah, it's a lovely
feeling,
isn't it? Knowing that they're not going to be remembering you as a drinker or having to see that behavior.
Yeah, yeah. And this is like, you know, it's cleared a lot of cloud of confusion and delusion upon me. You know, it has improved my anger, which was also holding me to achieve my potential to 100%, and it has embarked me to the different path of anger sobriety, which I have told my family that I'll start a new cycle of anger sobriety, so that I want to make sure that I want to work on my anger as well. You know, that's another thing that has been given to me by more clarity and self-awareness that sometimes you could be a bit angry, and that's not great for your friends and family, but you're human at the end of the day. But I'm working on my triggers that could make me angry, like, you know, how you're working on your triggers for the alcohol.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I think that's the thing that happens, I think, when you aren't permanently distracted by alcohol or hangovers, is that you are able to look at yourself and look at parts of your life and be honest with the things that you're doing well, and find love for the things that you do well and that are really lovely parts of you, but also start to see the bits that you would like to improve and change. And at the end of the day, we're humans and no one's perfect, and we all have our things, and a lot of the you know, the baggage that we sometimes carry, a lot of that can come from our childhood. Not blaming our parents, because our parents were doing their best probably, but you know, some of that, their upbringing and things like that, like there might have been those kinds of triggers that were developed back in those days that need some attention now and need to be looked at and need to be worked through and processed and accepted and let go of, and then compassion can build. And so I'm a huge believer that you can change anything. You know, you can, if you focus on it, you can change anything. I do believe that, you know, we can get better at things like that. I genuinely do, you know, and obviously with, you know, neuroplasticity and all of that, that science supports that as well, that you can change brain connections and you can get better. And I think that's really gives a lot of hope, and it's very inspiring, because, you know, this self-development journey that you're on, that I relate to, that I'm on, it's never ending. You know, I always want to be on this journey now. I always want to be trying to get better.
It's always a room of improvement, isn't it?
Always, yeah.
And always room to learn something new.
Definitely. And also, I think that's what makes life interesting. I think it's nice to approach life in that way, because there's always something to learn then. And so, you know, never a dull moment kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's always something to learn, and Yeah, it sounds like you're on an incredible journey and you are so honest as well with the way that you've explained your story, which I really, really appreciate. I think so many people can relate to this story, and yeah, it's just, it's must be very healing for you as well to kind of get that out and to have that opportunity to talk about it. And
especially considering an Asian man, it's very difficult to it's a massive taboo to open up yourself in front of you know, strangers, people. We don't do that, and I knew that I had to do it. It's a part of the journey. It's a way forward, to be very honest.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think there's so much in that vulnerability that it's very easy to feel afraid of being vulnerable, but actually that vulnerability is so powerful and it shows great strength as well. And
absolutely,
it's healing for other people, you know, and that's how I even got to this point where I had this show, is on, you know, with my Instagram and my stories. I was always trying to be always very honest, be honest about my journey, even the bits that weren't very nice to look at. And that's when people said, oh my God, that's just like, I relate to that. And that's just like me, you know, and it's sort of, I think it's brilliant to be in that place. And I hope
for sure. I think there are some aspects in every of your stories, you know, from the podcast, people can relate to some parts from each of the stories. It's quite healing, actually.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, there is. I think there's a lot of comfort in hearing your story or parts of your story in someone else's story. I'm not on my own. Like, it's not just...
Exactly.
So where can we find you and follow you on Instagram? We've got at Running Towards Sobriety.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? Yeah. So that's Running Towards with an S and then Sobriety. Before you go, have you got any tips? You've brought so much wisdom to this episode. To be honest, it's been so much insight and wisdom, but is there anything else that you would share before we close the conversation?
There are quite a lot. However, the three big tips which I found it most beneficial for myself is change the way you think, and don't white knuckle it. Please don't white knuckle it, and don't rely on willpower. Just work on your neuroplasticity. Try to work on your triggers. That's I felt the best way forward for a long-term sobriety. I'm not talking about the short term. Second one is an exercise. It is paramount. Please get yourself involved in some kind of exercise. As we all know, exercises just release happy hormones, dopamine, and everything. So it's so important. It keeps you busy. It gives you self-worth. And do your research. I find this is the most important tip of staying sober. You know, I believe it is quite imperative to know what alcohol is, what it does. Look into the data, how many people being killed and died every year or dies every year around the world. WHO, look at the WHO data and see yourself, you know. It's just not what you see on an advert where your beautiful men and women are drinking by the beach, because that's just a beginning. If you see them maybe six drinks later, you wouldn't want to even speak to these guys or want to drink alcohol again. You know, like how I saw myself when my friend showed me the video. I wouldn't want to speak to myself when I was there, or if I would have been there. So please do your research, do your due diligence. And I think and that research could be anyway by podcast or by books or by YouTube or Huberman podcast, or, you know, listen to people, those who know what they're talking about, you know, literate people.
Oh, such good advice. I love that as well. The WHO, that's the World Health Organization, and they do lots of studies and they've got lots of data and information about alcohol.
They do the country-wise data as well as the world data as well. And it's it's mind-boggling, you know, eye-opening that it's not that fancy drink which you're having and going to have fun forever. See yourself and do what your heart says after that.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what you're doing. And what a great role model that you are being for your children. And I'm sure that brings you a lot of pride as well. And is really important to you to be that person that you wanted to be for them. So, huge congratulations on your 319 days. And I hope you have a wonderful
one-year
soberversary. Or we were talking about this, the 23rd of September for you. And keep in touch. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on my show. Thank you so much for your honesty and for sharing your life with my listeners. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Terry. It was a blast. I really enjoyed. And listeners, again, sorry for all the mumbling if you ever heard, but that's just me, you know. Thank you very much.
I thought you were great. I understood. Yeah, I think you're a good storyteller, actually. Quite captivating at times. So, you need to have more confidence in that. Thank you to everybody else. Until next time, goodbye.
Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. If you're interested in being a guest, please contact me directly on Instagram by sending a message to @sassysobermum. You can also find helpful tools and resources on my website, sassysobermum.com. If you enjoyed the podcast and you want to spread the love, please like, share, and rate the podcast. I really look forward to next time. See you then.